Every moment in business happens only once. The next Bill Gates will not build an operating system. The next Larry Page or Sergey Brin won't make a search engine. And the next Mark Zuckerberg won't create a social network. If you are copying these guys, you aren't learning from them. So that was from Peter Thiel's book, Zero to One. And here with me to discuss it is Jason Blummer. So Jason, tell the folks a bit about yourself.
What's up, Mickey? Thank you for having me on your show. I'm a daily reader of your blog. So nice. Thank you for doing that. So I've been leading a virtual CPA firm focused on digital marketing agencies for, you know, getting close to 25 years, not quite. Wow. And lead another community, a consulting community for other accounting firm entrepreneurs, we call them. And that's another business called Thrival.
So nice. Awesome. Yeah, we've been a client of yours for what? 6 or 8 years now? It's been a while.
Long time.
You talk about a CPA firm for creative agencies. Like, that's us, and it's been fantastic you having that awesome angle on things. So it's been great. So
nice.
So you picked this book. As with all my guests in here, I say you pick what book we're going to do, and you pick Zero to One. So I know you have a lot to say about it. So why don't you just kind of give us the overview of why you like this book so much?
Okay, yeah. So Peter Thiel is a contrarian. So
I have a few thoughts in there. He says quotes in the book that, yeah.
Yeah, he's an extreme contrarian, which I enjoy. Mm-hmm. So I'll enjoy looking at things from a different vantage point. And can I just dive into my favorite questions in here?
Yeah, okay. Go for it.
So I love when he interviews people. This is the very first part of chapter one. He says, I ask him a question. What important truth do very few people agree with you on? Mm-hmm. Which is an amazing question. But I love in chapter three, he turns that into the contrarian business building question, where he says, what valuable company is nobody building? And I love that spin. That contrarian question, we use it now to help entrepreneurs that we're working with them on. And like, instead of him asking, hey, think of a company that's valuable that we could build, he's trying to get you to think of the one that needs to be built, that's not being built. Right. And so when we work with entrepreneurs, we kind of stole this methodology. They're trying to take a risk to grow or hire or acquire another agency or whatever. And we're always helping them try to know there's two risks you're always managing, which is, what if you don't acquire that agency? What is the risk you're currently bearing by not moving forward? And so that's kind of a flip. And so I got it from this contrarian flip. Instead of saying, you know, what's a valuable company we should build? He goes, what is the company that's not currently being operated? Which is a totally different way to look at it. So risk-based management can be like that, which is, do you want to take this risk? But what is the risk you're currently incurring by not having taken that risk yet? So there's always two risks to compare yourself against. So we kind of get to think about things in a more contrarian way and coach with agency owners. So love that part. That's one of the biggest parts that hit me in this book.
Yeah, and something you said to us a lot is, you get what that means. Like, any decision you make, you got to get the good stuff and the bad stuff.
That's
You get whatever that decision means. And so he's saying, if you don't acquire that business, you get what that means. Like, sure, saving money from not acquiring it, but then you're not going to grow or whatever the case is. And
And you can spend that, you know, get what it means on your – you know, a lot of entrepreneurs don't know what it takes to sacrifice for a business, for it to grow. And you do have to sacrifice a lot to make a business grow. And, you know, he gives us a lot of ways to look at things in different ways, which are kind of mind-blowing. I love it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, one of the somewhat contrarian things he says, but I think you and I will agree with, is work signaling. He said, quote, in the most dysfunctional organizations, signaling that work is being done becomes a better strategy for career advancement than actually doing the work. If this describes your company, you should quit now. And that came to mind. I was listening to a podcast yesterday with Cal Newport, who did Deep Work. I guess you probably read that. He had a quote that from his book that I thought tied in here. He said, if you send and answer emails at all hours, if you schedule and attend meetings constantly, if you weigh in on instant messaging systems, all those behaviors make you seem busy in a public manner. If you're using busyness as a proxy for productivity, then these behaviors can seem crucial for convincing yourself and others that you're doing your job well.
Right.
Which doesn't mean you're doing your job well. I mean, part of it does. You got to answer emails and stuff. But you see people are so busy and they're so proud of how busy they are, but they're not actually getting things done. So
Well, and I think it's important for entrepreneurs to have structures and systems. So as entrepreneurial companies grow, especially service-based organizations, and that's the ones me and my partner work with on, is just helping a service-based company scale. and you scale that with more people, or it's controllable too. You don't have to scale, you know, but you add more people, and that's how you scale. And it's difficult to do that. You have to add structure and kind of really create order from chaos. I think that's what entrepreneurs do.
Oh, yeah.
And when you do that, that structure, it actually starts solving some of that issue, which is team members who want to signal that they're working a lot, which is really sometimes I call kicking up dust, right? They're just kicking up a dust cloud form. But the larger you get and the more structure you add to a company, actually a lot of that stuff starts to stand out more because you have more protocol, more core value philosophy people are following. And then it forces some of your other team members to start standing out that they're not, you know, following kind of the path that the rest of the team is. And structure does that. Structure brings accountability to kind of avoid that signaling. Because that's real.
Yeah, I would have thought that. I would have sort of thought the opposite, where the smaller team is easier to see when people are signaling versus working. But that's a good point. As you get better structures in place.
Right.
You gotta fit in the box, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. So when you have a smaller team, and there's kind of some team ranges you can think about, but you know, up to 5 or 6 or 7 or something like that, an entrepreneur can really have more of an intimate view of what everybody's doing without a lot of structure. But as you get bigger, the owners get further away from people, right? So instead of 6 people, you have 15 or 20. You don't know who's really working or not. And that's when you start leaning on your structure or the order you've created, the processes. And then people start falling away from the process. And that's how you start to be able to tell with a larger team.
Gotcha. How big is your team these days?
So it's 15 now.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. 15.
Very cool. So, yeah, for those that don't know us, we're up to 9 now.
With
very slow growth, and we're very happy with that. Again, we've not done a lot of what he says in the book here. We've been very cautious and slow and not too contrarian, but it works well sometimes too. But I certainly appreciate what he says.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously he's trying to teach us right philosophies around company building.
Yep.
And he does say, it's funny, you know, he talks about Don't whether it's the quote you read, right? Mm-hmm. Don't do what somebody else is doing, so don't copy. But you and I do have pretty general standard businesses, right? A CPA firm and a digital agency. So, but those still work.
Oh, yeah.
Those are still valuable. The economy still needs them. He's talking to startups, right, that are trying to create these massive valuations. So he's talking to people that need to start building something brand new that's not existed.
Yeah. And like you said,
which is hard.
You know, even we do need some of those out there, but there's a need for right. more CPA firms and other people to just do the stuff that needs to be done.
That's right.
And then if you want to go for something big, cool, go for it. And there's always things we can get out of it too. Like this book, again, if you're thinking, I don't want to have a startup like that, this doesn't apply to me. There's a ton of great lessons in here.
Oh,
that are worth seeing. So one I saw, a contrarian view I saw in the book where he seems to disagree with himself, and I'm curious your thoughts here. He said at one point, he said, quote, if your product requires advertising or salespeople to sell it, it's not good enough. Technology is primarily about product development, not distribution. But then later he says, quote, your products will never sell themselves. Your team needs to do that. And if you've invented something new but haven't invented an effective way to sell it, you have a bad business no matter how good the product. Which, I hate that last sentence. I agree with him completely, but I hate it. I always wish the better products, the better services would always rise to the top. But sales and positioning matters so much to make yours stand out, even if it's not necessarily the best. But what are your thoughts on that, where he says, if you need salespeople, it's not good enough, but then on the other hand, you need salespeople. It seems contrarian to me. So,
well, I guess the first statement, I don't know, he speaks in a lot of principles and platitudes. Mm-hmm. So I think he's saying, you know, probably trying to make a point, the value of a company just sometimes should stand on its own, its value. Mm-hmm. Like Apple, right? They're a great example. And I guess they've really never had a sales force other than their stores, right? When they opened up the stores.
And those are even relatively new in the history of Apple, so yeah.
Yeah, those are new, and I think those were just even part of their experience, too, with the product. So some companies are so valuable, they don't need salespeople, and I think he's talking about that. But of course, that's not true for all of our businesses, right? Especially when we don't have a monopoly, which I love his thoughts on monopolies.
Yeah, he's very pro-monopoly, which is interesting. Yeah.
Well, I read that and I'm like, of course, that's a contrarian view.
Right.
He loves monopolies and the value they can add. But you and I don't have a monopoly.
Right.
Not quite.
I'm not the only digital marketing firm in the world, so yeah.
Right, and we're not the only CPA firm. And, you know, we're not the only virtual firm anymore. That's becoming more and more common. So, of course, we need salespeople. Of course, we need marketing and positioning, which marketing and sales, you know, are different.
Yeah.
But we have to have that stuff to let people know we exist and that we're valuable and how we differentiate and stand out from our competitor.
Yeah, so. And that's where being remarkable, it reminded me of Josh Kaufman's book, The Personal MBA. I don't know if you've read that one, but
no,
he pulls in quotes from a lot of other people. So in the book, he pulls a quote from Robert Stevens that just simply says, advertising is the tax you pay for being unremarkable. So if you're not remarkable enough, you have to advertise more. But again, I think it's like right. you where I think some of both is okay. You can advertise and then people see how remarkable you are and you'll still make the sales because especially in industries like ours, there's so many out there. You're not going to just stand out automatically. So you need some ads or marketing to get people to find you and then they can see the remarkable difference you have.
Yeah, for sure. And also when people write books, they've got to say cool things that are contrarian. So I don't know about you, but when I read books or now that I'm older when I read books, I can really kind of skip the fluff and scan to a lot of the good stuff. So quotes like that are good and I get their point, but it doesn't mean marketing and sales is not needed. It'll always be needed.
Right. But again, back to what he's trying to do with, you know, the thought of monopolies here, I guess we should unpack that a little bit. Is he saying your business should be so new and stand out from anything anyone's done? It is a monopoly just by default because it hasn't existed before.
Right.
And so again, if you can be very remarkable in that monopoly, as it were, then you can dominate there. It is interesting. I didn't quite follow him all the way down, but he seems to like monopolies even as they get huge, which I tend to disagree with at that point. But I like where he started with him at least, where you should be so unique that you're a monopoly just by default because it doesn't exist elsewhere.
That's right. I love – well, right, because the very existence of a monopoly proves the point that you created something so valuable that you're really the only provider that can give that. And he makes a point in that section, the lesson for entrepreneurs is clear. If you want to create – and capture lasting value, don't build an undifferentiated commodity business. Now, and you and I are in businesses that could be easily commodified, already have been, you know. But the cool thing about my business and your business is we can get on different parts of a value chain. Like, you know, we could go all the way down the low value chain and just do a bunch of 1040 individual returns, which we don't do. So we push up in our value chain in our chosen market to businesses. So we're only wanting to serve businesses because they have a better perception of value, you know, than individuals can actually pay. And same for you. There's a lot of, you know, commoditization. But he's just basically saying, yeah, build something that's so valuable, it just can't exist somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think in that definition, monopolies are going to be rare.
Yeah,
because
that too.
Few people, right, are going to be able to build a business like that.
Right, and if it does take off, then others are going to jump in right away to try to get a piece of the pie.
Totally.
So yeah,
totally.
You see that with Uber. I don't know if Uber was technically the first, but they felt like the first. But then you see others, Lyft, and other smaller ones come up quickly. Where
exactly?
Yeah, you know, that happened there. Yeah, the commodity stuff is interesting because I'm wondering if this is the same for you. But you know, we build WordPress sites, which very easily can be commoditized. Mm. We build in custom and have our designer work it and have storytelling behind it and do it that way. But there's a commodity market for that too, where people only have a couple $100 and just want someone to knock up a site for them, which is not us. But we know those people in that part of the market and can support them. And I'm guessing you're the same, where someone comes and says, "Jason, I need my 1040 done." You're like, "That's not really what we do." But here's Martha at this other company. Here's so and so. You know,
pointing
in that direction to the commodity.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But you know, technology is changing all of our businesses. Obviously, that's hitting everybody. Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah. So even the 1040s now cannot even be referred to another firm or person, but to platforms. You know, that like an Upwork. There are Upworks being built for the tax accounting world. You know, and so you can just refer into that, and there's 1,500 accountants, and they'll bid on the tax return. The reason I don't like that, but like you said, Mickey, there is a business for that, right? But what I don't like about that is any kind of platform where you bid, obviously, what are we doing? We're bidding down.
Right.
And that's a complete opposite belief I have in the value of companies. I want to build a monopoly if I could. I would be one of the ones that go in front of the Senate, right, to talk about. Because I would want to do that if I could. You have to do something brand new. But I don't like some things. I just don't believe in going into a platform because now the bid process is to bid down, right?
Right.
I'm going to choose, obviously, the lowest bid that I receive. And now we're basing our service on the lowest price, which is the definition of a commodity. And so I want to completely do the opposite of that. And I want to make sure my prices are double what somebody else's are if I can, if the value is justified. Say the value there, price.
You're, yeah, you're not cheap, right. But we still think you're a steal for the value you bring versus what you charge us. I mean, yeah, your prices seem very low for the value you bring, but they're higher than other similar firms. So it's just seeing that value in there.
And so pricing is a differentiator, right? If you're trying to not be a commodity, pricing is a way to kind of – that's one way to set you apart, and I don't think people use that as a positioning tool a lot of times, but I think we can.
Yeah, Seth Godin often said, if you're in a race to the bottom, be careful because you might just win. You
know, that's right.
Not a good place to be. And he talks about ads too, like with Google ads. Like when it starts out, like, okay, I'm going to pay 25 cents for this Google ad and I make a dollar every time. But if you make a dollar every time, someone else is going to bid 50 cents and eventually you're going to be bidding 99 cents to make a dollar because it's just a push to that because you're not differentiated enough. And so
that's it. That's how commodities work.
So. Yeah, it's brutal.
No.
Let's see. We're getting a little low on time here, so it's kind of head toward that. I do like this one other quote here. He says, the most valuable businesses of coming decades will be built by entrepreneurs who seek to empower people rather than try to make them obsolete, which I kind of disagree with, but gosh, I hope he's right. Like, I really want that to be the case, where the most valuable ones will empower people versus try to make them obsolete, because it seems like most of the big companies are working hard to make everyone else obsolete. Is their kind of goal as monopolies? What are your thoughts on that, empowering people versus making them obsolete?
Yeah. You know, I think you and I both will believe if we're running a service-based company, we believe in empowering people. That's kind of what it comes with. If you don't like people, you're not going to do well if you're growing a services company, right?
For sure.
And so I'm all about empowerment of people. But in our economy, there's going to be both, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be large businesses and platforms and monopolies that provide such an extreme value. Yeah, they may churn through their team. If they have 10,000 people on their team, they just don't know them.
Right.
So you have to get in touch with some of your community, your employees, or your colleagues. Really, that's kind of your only community. So, I'm about empowering people.
Oh yeah, you sure are.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want my personal life statement to be about moving people forward. You know, I want being in a relationship with somebody. I want them to have learned something, moved forward in some way, or had some kind of influence with us. So I'm a big belief in that. A big part of my work is to sacrifice myself for others.
Yeah. Well, and the more you can empower like clients like us, the longer we'll stick with you too. So it's a win-win.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a retention strategy.
Exactly. So, helping your clients succeed. What a novel thought. It's great.
I love it.
Anything else you want to share from the book?
Yeah, nope, those are good, man. This is good. But I love the points you did make. So this is a great contrarian book that makes me think. And as you go through it, just like any book, he's very clear and direct about things he says.
He sure is, yeah.
And I like that it bumps up and I can disagree with some of it.
Yep.
And I love a book that's so clear about what they believe, I can disagree. And it doesn't make all of his points invaluable. It just is fun to really absorb that contrarian nature. So even some of your quotes are, you know, you disagreed with some of them, and I do too. But I love the book because of its contrarian nature, how it makes you think. And we do need to think more like, you know, startups building monopolies and building businesses that have never existed before. We need to apply some of that thinking. So yeah,
that's a good point. It's a good point with this clarity. I love books that are super clear, even if I disagree, because if they're contrarian and they're kind of all over the place, it's hard to follow. But here, you know what he's going for, and you can see the parts that apply and what don't. And his clarity is fantastic. I love authors like him that are so clear in what they believe that you at least know what you're talking about.
So, I love that. And so that's a book if anybody wants to read it. Yeah, and he does talk about things that some of us can't achieve, maybe, but the way he does it makes you think. That's what I love.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, Jason, this has been fantastic. How can folks find you and learn more about you?
Yeah, you can go to blummercpas.com if you want, or you can go to jasonblummer.com, and those are ways to find us.
Cool. I'll have those in the show notes so people can find there. So great to have you. Always good to talk to you.
Cool. Thanks, Mickey.
All right. See ya.
See ya.